to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, Rock Bay Stacks and Giants, Anthony Miley, Mr. Matt Weber. SP Futures up 7.25, Dow Futures up 62, NASDAQ Futures up 30. Trying to make back that, got that down day on Friday. What are we doing going down, Matty? This is bull.
Let's go back at it.
Let's go right back at it. That's the drill. We don't care. That's what we do. We inflate. We inflate with the dollars. We don't seem to care what happens with that. Interesting weekend in sports. We have Mr. Flanagan calling in a little while. We'll talk about all this stuff because there's been some very interesting revelations that we've had lately, man. We had that letter from that somebody wrote in regarding the how the welfare in Illinois is so screwed up that it when people get like a raise in the minimum wage, if they're actually getting benefits, the benefits go down, so they end up losing money in some areas. This is just crazed. And I met some people this weekend, and I was talking about somebody who's been a friend of mine for ages, in ages and ages, and family's been taking care of the parents, and, you know, both are still alive, both have issues in their own home, and they've been taking care of them, they've had the caregivers and all that stuff. And the cost per month to take care of everybody is around $5,000 or $6,000. And you can't get any help on Medicaid or anything to take care of somebody at home. But as soon as you don't have any money anymore, they will put both into nursing home, and the Medicaid will pay out $12,000 for the nursing home instead of helping out with the $6,000 at home. Can you think of any possible way that makes sense to anybody?
Seems a little backwards.
It is really something. And I don't know how you even begin when you talk about, you know, all the fighting back and forth between the right and the left. Don't you think somebody should take time out to fix some of this crap and just think it through? You watch this and you listen to all the people on yesterday on the talk shows on Sunday, where all the different people from the administration, the people criticize them, just talk past each other, and nobody gives a straight answer, and it's quite frankly, and then they give a evasive answer, and just for the facts, and it's like you watch this stuff, and you're just appalled, and you're like, this could possibly be, you know, like our people, and yet it is. The thing I sent you yesterday, I was going to kind of dig it up here, and I'll tease it a little bit, but as soon as I find it. That letter, we should try and get that dude on the air. The guy that thing. Did you read that thing I sent you last night? Probably not.
Not yet.
But it was sort of interesting. There's a guy, I get like this, where are we at? I'll find it. I don't know how I got this thing, but I get this stuff from Quora, and some people answer these questions on Quora. This guy sounds, there was a guy named Jamie Cawley. We're going to try and get him on the air one of these days. He's an author of Beliefs in the World They Have Created, which is interesting, and The Birth of Now. And somebody says, the question is, what will future historians call the age of revolution America is currently going through? And he doesn't, let's just say he doesn't think it's much of a revolution. He goes, it is sadly exactly not an age of revolution, but an age of oblivious decline. It says, okay, sounds like Carl. U.S. has several huge problems that it's completely ignoring. The grotesque ripoff that is U.S. health. He has 17% of GDP, which is, by the way, it's past 20 now. So he should check his facts. This is double what anywhere else spends, with medical outcomes measured is not quite as good as leading countries spending half the amount. This has arisen only over the last 30 years. Before then, the U.S. was comparable to others. He's right about that. This is the lunatic waste of money that is U.S. military spending. 5% of GDP, as much as the next 10 largest defense budgets put together, 11 aircraft carrier groups when the next largest fleet is one. And this is, by the way, the aircraft carriers are useless for defense. This is a fantastic waste on agricultural subsidy. The appalling waste and injustice of the world's largest prison population, double anywhere else per head. This, too, is very new. This is the one I've been... I know that in your mind, in a lot of people's minds, and from somebody who doesn't mind tipping a glass and who actually likes to gamble, I know I'm being somewhat hypocritical when I criticize this stuff. So the achievement of mass addiction in a wildly profitable illegal drugs business. I honestly, Maddie, I think that's a huge problem. And I think we're very blindly going into this marijuana thing. I really do. I
don't even think that's what he's talking about.
No.
He's talking about addictive drugs. Marijuana's not even addictive.
Okay.
I think he's talking about opiates.
I what I'm talking about is...
We're in complete agreement with.
Well, no, I'm saying, but if you go to the next level, I mean, I know people like to gamble a little bit on sports, okay, and I don't have a problem really with anybody doing it because I like doing it myself. But somehow or another, I don't like the way that the, I don't know, I have a conundrum on this one. I don't think it's a problem I don't think people should go to jail for using marijuana, alright? I don't think, people should go to jail for betting on the Bears either. So on one hand, I got foot on that, I got water on that shoulder. I know, but I also know that the idea of a state to blow it out there wildly legal or available for everybody that doesn't even know the odds, and because to them it's all about taxes without any thought of the idea of what the costs are going to be. Without any thought of that. I mean, we're talking about, all we care about in marijuana is selling $4 billion worth of stuff. Now, that's $4 billion out of people's pockets that a lot of people can't afford. And we're going to get 30% of that for taxes, which I believe is what they're charging on recreational stuff. So we're going to get, well, you know, what's 30% of $4 billion? $1.2 billion?
Yeah.
Math is still okay.
That sounds good.
And that's all they care about. It's all about the sports thing. It's all we care about. I mean, on the one hand, you look at the lottery numbers. On the other hand, you walk into the gas station and see the people. They couldn't possibly figure out what the odds are if they were told, by the way, which they're probably not, especially on the daily spin cards. And all it is just a huge, in their mind, it's a huge slam of a cash from one group of people to another, other people to them. And I have real issues with that. I mean, if you and I went out and played poker. And, you know, somebody won, somebody lost, or whatever. I don't care. If we bet on golf, I don't care. If we go to Vegas and turn on a sports bet, I don't care. But if all of a sudden you're just, the whole thing is to take, you know, X number of billion dollars out of somebody's pocket and transfer them to my pocket. Because the whole society, doesn't matter if you and I make it a game. You know what I'm saying? For them is, everybody's gonna lose. I mean, there might be one guy, you and I,
How is it any different than what Vegas has done forever?
It isn't necessarily, except that when Vegas started all this stuff, Vegas had 500,000 people, 300,000 people, and people went there, they enjoyed themselves, and they left. And even in Vegas, I used to see a problem where I'd pull into a gas station and get gas, and inside the gas station, you saw all the people with no dough paying the nickel slot machines all morning. I mean, it takes a massive toll out of some sections of your population.
There's no doubt about that. Yeah. I mean, you can get addicted to gambling, unquestionably, and it's a dangerous thing for some people that have that problem.
I'm saying the motivation of you and I enjoying ourselves for a weekend in Las Vegas, but our own dough, this is America, it's freedom, is totally different to the motivation to Pritzker. Pritzker is, I'm going to suck even more money out of my people because I'm not getting enough in taxes, I'm not getting enough. Now I got to get them on marijuana, and I got to get them on other stuff. And now next year, when the liquor industry is selling 20% less booze because everybody's on hooch, they're going to say, what the bleep? I mean, in other words, do you really get anywhere when your whole motivation is the next dollar out of the people's voted for you pockets? You know what I'm saying? I mean, on the one hand, The people that love to gamble, when I was a Ute, either got a bet down on a Bears at the barbershop, basically, or the bar, or you got to the racetrack. Okay, well, now there's a casino. Guess what? The racetracks now are broke. Now we're going to have sports betting somewhere else. What if we start opening sports betting downtown and nobody goes to the casino? I mean, this incredible, like a rabid dog after somebody's next dollar is what I'm opposed to. You know what I'm saying? I don't mind you and I and somebody gambling with money we can afford.
I think people should be able to do whatever they want. I've always said that, as long as they're not hurting anybody else. If you choose to gamble, or if you choose to smoke weed, if you choose to drink, as long as you're not, you know, getting in the car over the illegal limit, as long as you're not, you know, hurting other people, I think you should be able to do whatever you want. As far as Illinois' situation, we know Illinois is in a dire situation. People are leaving. The debt is crazy. The taxes are about as high as they could possibly be, and they're still barely making a dent in the debt. So they're trying to figure out any possible way to turn that ship around, and I get that. And I mean, is this the right way to do it? I don't know. It's a way to do it, but they're trying. This is two things that people voted for in a landslide that the people wanted. So I don't have a problem with it.
Well, I do. Because I don't think they're very rigorous as figuring out what the costs are. I don't know that you that there's any kind of study as to who exactly buying lottery tickets. What is the educational level of people buying the instant games? I don't think there's any.
Well, you could outlaw lottery and stuff like that tomorrow and I'd be fine. That's a complete waste. It's just stealing from people because you have no chance of winning. Sports betting and marijuana, I think, are two different things.
What about video poker in every bar and restaurant?
You can get rid of that too.
Okay, but you're saying, let's get rid of the stuff that
I didn't have a
like.
Chance to vote for that.
Well, my point is it's one on top of another on top of another. And you know, as you know, I'm way too observant for my mental health. I can't help but notice the people that are waitressing at a place stopping and dropping 25 in the video poker on the way out the door. I have a feeling their family needs the 25. I just have the feeling. And it's not like you and me hoping we can actually count cards at a table in Vegas, or you actually find it a challenge to, and I know people, sure, a lot of other people do, and you're smart enough to bet football, okay, when it's, you know, the vig is only 10%, and you actually, there's a reasonable chance that if you study up on it, you might actually be able to, quote, win. All right, now on an individual level, I get that. Because I actually thought at blackjack, I might be able to win, okay? And I should be able to do that. But I also know, collectively at lottery, I'm not going to win, right? And collectively at blackjack, people aren't going to win, or they wouldn't still have the game, right? So I'm saying you and I look at it differently, then let's just suck more money out of our people's pockets. I'm saying that's the part I don't get, because I don't approve of, because I know they're going to be very light on the who exactly. I think they should go into the Pepe's in Orland and the places in somebody's saloons in these neighborhoods and find out the people in Blue Island. And Blue Island is not necessarily a rich suburb, last time I checked. I mean, the fact that the machines on the golf course, even in the wintertime, people walk over from the housing thing, and I'm gonna guess, I don't know what the average, person makes in that area, Maddie, but all I know is that 10 grand a month going on those machines could be going to something else. You know, I look at it not that the guy's having a good time, which he is, or a lady, but I look at 10 grand a month is, it's two roofs, you know, it's a car every 3 months. I'm saying it, all the state looks at it as is sucking money out of those people. They don't care about what happened, where it was meant to go. You know what I'm saying?
I don't disagree with you on that. They don't care. What they care about is trying to get us out of this debt that we're in.
But I'm saying, you and I look at it as something we ought to be able to do as free people. They look at it as another tax.
That's how I look at it. Yeah, that's not how you're looking at it.
Yeah, I do.
I don't think you are.
I'm just saying,
you spent the last 20 minutes going against it.
I'm saying when it becomes state-sponsored, it's nothing more than a tax over the rest of the people. I don't mind a private casino in a place where it's legal like Vegas.
You don't think the Vegas casinos are taxed?
Sure they are.
Of course they are. But everything is taxed.
I don't think they're taxed. I think they're property tax and their income tax. What else is taxed they got on?
I assume, have you ever stayed in Vegas recently? Have you looked at your hotel receipt? The entertainment tax, quote unquote, line item is like 20%.
Well, they're going to the same
issue. It's insane.
They're going to the same issue we are. I'm talking about when I used to go all the time in the 70s and 80s in a regular hotel, and most of them were $10 a night, some of them. But what I'm saying is they had a property tax, they had an income tax. I don't think there was a tax on the crap table.
The tax is now on your receipt. I go to Vegas 6 times a year. In fact, I'll be there in a few weeks. The taxes on your receipt now are insane when you stay at a hotel in Vegas. First of all, the rates are insane. But then if you actually look at your receipt and look at every line item and you see, you know, your entertainment tax, your amusement tax, all this stuff, all these line items, it's crazy.
I went to Arizona last time I went for spring training. It had to be 20 years ago. We went in the summertime. I rented a car, and the taxes were like twice the price of the car.
Yeah,
but I mean that's my point. The whole idea of a state, of municipality, competitively doing their best to tax people from out of the state is sort of their right because everybody else does it. I mean, do we really want marijuana in the state, or are we afraid that if Michigan has it, that money really should be ours, and somebody's going to go to Michigan and buy it?
Well, Michigan already has it.
Right, but okay.
But yeah, you're competing against Indiana and Iowa and Minnesota and Wisconsin and Missouri. I mean, that's what you're competing against.
Well, I guess
my question, yes, you're right. That is what they're doing.
My question is, where does it end? I mean, if all of a sudden you can have streetwalkers in Michigan, do we have to have streetwalkers because we're now losing money?
If the people voted for it, I'd be fine with it.
Okay. I mean, it's... I mean, when the societies go down the degenerative moral rat hole... because there's people who still think they can win on a lottery, Manny.
I don't know anyone. I mean, you're probably right. There probably are, but I've never played the lottery. I don't get it. I'll never understand.
You have no chance
of winning.
Walk into a couple of these convenience stores at lunchtime downtown and watch the people that are spending half their paycheck on the instant games.
Yeah, I mean you see it all the time. You see people walking in with lottery scratch offs. It's always older people, and I don't know why, but I think it's going to go away. I've never seen a younger person do it.
Why would it ever go away?
Because I've never seen a younger person do it. Maybe you automatically start doing it when you get into your 60s. I don't know.
But even if you fleece half the people you're fleecing now, you never stop fleecing.
I'm saying that when my generation becomes in our 60s, I can't imagine us playing scratch-offs and buying lottery tickets. I just can't imagine it happening. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Well, you don't see your generation going to the track either, and the track is a much better deal than most gambling.
I like going to the track.
Better
but
too.
But you're right, you don't, and the tracks are going under.
I'm saying that the state of Illinois has no more preparation for, you know, 50,000 people in the middle of the day being high than the man in the moon. And they have apportioned none of those costs to those effects. They have not thought it through at all, is what I'm saying.
Well, I don't know if you have any evidence to support that, but I don't have any,
you have any evidence to support
that. Exactly. I don't have any evidence on the other side. All I know is that they have 10 years of Colorado having a booming economy that is unheard of for a state. And the marijuana industry is a huge part of that. And they looked at that, like the 12 other states or however many are there are now that are illegal, and they looked at that and they said, we want a piece of that, because if we wait too long, and like you said, Indiana and Wisconsin and Iowa and all these surrounding states start doing it, then we're going to miss out. And so Illinois put it on the ballot. It won in a landslide. And here we are, and we'll see.
Well, last two times
there's been 4-hour lines every single day since it's opened 2 weeks ago.
Last two times I drove when it was warm enough, my window open through Hubbard's Cave, the entire cave smelled like marijuana. Just saying.
It could have been passengers.
Well, then we had okay. I'm just saying we have issues.
Was it coming out of your truck? Was it?
No. I'll tell you what, the new stuff really smells. It's strong, but it smells.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. Well, let's talk about some sports. What about this will be quite the game next week, the Kansas City versus these guys that will just run the ball.
Well, Tennessee played Kansas City in the regular season and actually beat them. I believe 35-22 was the final. And I wouldn't predict that. In fact, I can probably pull up the early line and tell you what Vegas has as the spread.
I'll bet Kansas City's got to be 10 points.
I would say you're probably close to being right. Tennessee was 9.5-point dogs against Baltimore and won outright pretty handily.
Yeah, but it was never even close. It was 28-6, wasn't it?
Exactly. And so I'd assume you're right that there'll probably be 9.5, 10-point dogs in the early line here. Actually, not quite. I'm showing that right now that we'll see. This is probably going to move a lot throughout the week. But right now, Kansas City is favored by 7.5 over.
Which way is it
going
to move?
I think people are going to bet. I don't know. Actually, I think people are going to bet Kansas City, and that might go up a little bit.
So you're going to try and middle it?
San Francisco is favored by 7 over the Packers, which seems like a lot, too.
Didn't the Packers get spanked pretty good out there a couple weeks ago?
They did. And in fact, the Packers have gone to the West Coast twice this year, and they got killed in both games. They went to San Francisco, and they went to the L.A. Chargers, and they got dominated in both games.
You think San Francisco's happy to not be going to Green Bay on a Sunday night in January?
Yes. I think so. The Green Bay-San Francisco final, I think, was maybe predicted by some people, although a lot of people thought the Saints might be in the mix. Kansas City was certainly predicted to be in the AFC Championship, but Tennessee really came out of nowhere. No one thought they could win in Foxborough, and they did. No one thought they could win in Baltimore, and they did. And now no one thinks they can win in Kansas City. And, are they one of those wild card teams from 6 or 7 years ago, the Giants, that would go on the road and just everyone doubted them every week, and then every week they'd win, and then they'd go to the Super Bowl, and they beat the Patriots twice in the Super Bowl? I don't know. I mean, just by running the ball and playing good defense, can you still win? And it looks like you can.
Well, it seems to me that the two teams that are, I don't know what happened to the Ravens. I thought the Ravens had everything, but, I don't know. I thought the Ravens were, well, I still think they're a pretty premium team. It just seems like the...
Over the course of the season, they were the best team.
Two best teams.
Big sample size. They lost one game.
Well, the two best teams 5 weeks in were the Patriots and the Saints. And they just kept losing people. And it seems like they finally ran out of gas with the 45th man being an all-star in the making. And all of a sudden, Brady had nobody to throw to except one guy. And actually, the same thing happened to Seattle. I mean, if they didn't have Russell Wilson, they wouldn't have been anywhere near the.
There's no doubt, as we say every year, the NFL is a battle of attrition. I mean, the Packers have been very healthy this year, whereas in past years they haven't been. And so this year they went 13-3, and now they're in the NFC Championship game because they've been extremely healthy. Whereas Seattle, like you said, outside of Wilson, I mean, they had basically nobody. It's Wilson and Lockett and a couple guys on defense, and they're just scratching and clawing. And here we are. San Francisco's been very healthy. The Bears were very healthy last year. This year, the Bears were injured like crazy and couldn't get out of their own way.
Who's the one receiver in Seattle? Boy, is he good.
Lockett. Yeah, he's great. And then they have...
is he the guy who was... What?
They have Metcalf as well.
Metcalf's the guy.
Metcalf's the rookie, and he looks like he's the real deal. Lockett's the all-pro that they've had for a couple years.
Well, Metcalf is the guy that was... he had something wrong in college, so he went in the second round. Like I'm saying, is that guy was a high first-rounder. He wasn't...
Yeah, he had the talent to be a top-10 pick. Because he was 6'3 and ran a 4.3 40, and
that's
which
interesting,
which is unheard of.
Yeah,
he had some sort of fracture, like in his neck or spine or something, in college, like a really serious injury, and he dropped to the last pick of the second round, and that's where Seattle got him.
Yeah, the guy gets the ball all around him, and nobody can, you know. The S&P futures here. We're coming right back. S&P futures up 9. Back with Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right
now. Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Weber on the board. Mr. John Flanagan in a second. Well, we have him now, but we'll talk to him after we're done with this. S&P futures up 950 is almost exactly what we were down on Friday. Can't be down, got to be up. Is that futures up 34, Dow futures up 83, and we've got over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 33.2%, FTSE up 20.3%, CAC around up 3, call that flat. So let's just say Europe is flat. Over in Asia, we have the Nikkei up 110.5%, Shanghai up 23.7%, Hang Seng up 1.1%. Again, this is a week and a half or so since China said raising the lowering the reserve requirements yet again. So all that borrowing we were concerned about, let's do more because we need some more. Bonds, 1.84 on the 10-year here. The Bund, wow, minus 0.17. So that's the highest we've seen it. And the Japan still hanging above zero. Guess how much? Oh, no, Maddie, sorry. Minus 0.001. It was positive 0.001 on Friday. Let's just say they're pretty much flat. So what does that mean? You borrow or... Doesn't matter whether you borrow or lend, same money? That's kind of odd. I don't see how that works, actually. Oil, or I think it doesn't work. Oil, 59.03, it's down a penny. Brent down 3 cents, 64.95. So they're actually lower than when the whole Iran thing started, which is interesting. Natural gas, 222. RBOB gas, 165. We've got gold down 620, 1553. Silver down 8 cents, 1802. These guys were up Friday afternoon after we did the show, so they're back down a little bit from there. Maddie, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a pretty good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Traffic building on the Edens and Kennedy. Specifically on the Kennedy out near O'Hare for Monday morning business traffic, we see a buildup there. No issues coming into downtown. Eisenhower and Stevenson are looking good at this hour. Traffic slowly building. Southside expressways are off to a good start. Suburban tollways are all quiet. Only crash in the area right now is on the south side, Damon and 29th Street. There's a multi-vehicle accident, it says, that happened about 20 minutes ago. So crews are on the scene there. But everything else seemed good out there. Weather today, a decent mid-January day. Partly cloudy skies with a high of 36. Right now it's overcast and 32 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 68 today. Right now it's clear and 40. In sports, it was divisional weekend in the NFL, and yesterday's games were interesting. The Chiefs fell behind 24-0 at home against Houston. And it looked like the Texans were going to upset Kansas City, and then the Chiefs stormed back, 51-7. They outscored Houston the rest of the way and blew out the Texans. 51-31 was the final, so the Chiefs advanced to the AFC Conference Championship game for the second straight season. They will take on the Tennessee Titans, of course, who upset Baltimore on Saturday night. The nightcap last night saw a good one between the Packers and Seahawks. Packers led 21-3 at the half and led 28-10 with a minute to go in the third quarter. And then Seattle stormed back and made it interesting, had the ball down 5 with 2.5 minutes left, couldn't get it done, and then couldn't get a stop on Green Bay in that final possession. And the Packers were able to work the clock all the way down to triple zeros, beating Seattle 28-23 and advancing to the NFC Championship game. Where they will travel to take on number one seeded San Francisco and the 49ers. NBA basketball, Bulls were off. Suns were in action. They beat the Hornets 100-92. In hockey, Blackhawks were off. Coyotes lost to the Penguins 4-3. College hoops, the Arizona Wildcats lost big at Oregon State 82-65. And of course, the NCAA football national championship is tonight, Chief. Undefeated LSU versus undefeated Clemson. That's a 7 p.m. Chicago time kickoff from New Orleans.
I want to give my one comment. And hello, John, how are you?
I'm good, Tom, and you?
I'm okay, but I'm going to give my one ignorant comment here. It's been so long, I forgot all about that game until you mentioned it, Manny. And I'm supposed to be in the sports business.
There you go.
You think I'm the only one?
After the NFL yesterday and college basketball starting to get in a full swing with the conference games and everything, it easily is not top of mind.
No, thank you. Instead of just saying I'm old and forgetful.
No, a two-week layoff is really strange. And we explained why they did it, but it's still kind of ridiculous.
It was a very convoluted explanation. But
yeah.
By the way, your girlfriend must have been in a good mood Saturday, Friday night.
Why is that?
Because Iowa clobbered somebody good.
Oh, basketball. Yeah, they beat number 12 Maryland by 20, and Iowa was about three starters.
I watched the game. They look like a machine. You would never have guessed those other guys were ranked that high.
Yeah. Iowa's good. I mean, they were ranked for part of the year. Then they, like I said, they're without three starters.
Forever or just for a while?
Two forever, and then one, is day to day.
What happened to the
first guy? Tore his ACL.
Jesus.
The second guy had to have hip surgery. So they're both going to get medical red shirts, but that was two, so they're both out. And then the third guy has some sort of stress. They're calling it a stress in his foot, so I don't know if that's a fracture or what. He's in a walking boot, and they think he could be back in a week or two. But you take three starters off any college team, and they're going to struggle. So they go to at Nebraska. I was ranked like 20th or something. They go to Nebraska and they lose, and Nebraska is terrible. So then everyone's like, well, season's over, their starters are out, they're done. And then no one expected what happened Friday night. Maryland comes to town. Maryland's ranked 12th. Some people think they're a Final Four caliber team, and Iowa just killed them.
I mean, it was never even the amount of passing, the driving. I mean, they played exceptionally well.
They're a very good offensive team, and when they actually play defense like they did on Friday, they're pretty unbeatable. And KenPom, the college basketball analyst that does all the advanced metrics for college basketball, had Iowa before the injuries as the number one offensive team in the country. Right now he has them at the number six offensive team in the country. But the problem is they're the 76th defensive team. So that kind of puts them in the 20th overall.
Well, they have their style, Ole.
Yeah, pretty much. But they played D against Maryland, and that was a good one to watch. Joe was happy.
I always like playing old A defense when you could.
That's how you rest.
Yeah.
You put your energy in on offense, you rest on defense.
God. It is interesting. I wish somebody would do a serious study about why all these people are getting hurt. I think a lot of it has to do, and this is just a guy who, we've been around a while, John, but I don't recall. I mean, you look at the Bulls, the run they had for how many years. Did they lose anybody to injury the entire time?
I mean,
nothing of any consequence or serious injuries that I can think of.
Yeah, Jordan broke his foot in what, his second year?
And he was out for the year.
He
came back for the playoffs, scored 60 points.
That's right. And he was never really hurt the rest of his career. I remember Pippen would have some back issues that he would kind of, I don't know, it seemed like once a month it would kind of flare up and he might miss a game or two, but he was relatively healthy. And I remember Ron Harper had some foot issues or something. But for the most part, they were healthy. And guys,
Ron Harper, when he got him, he was older.
And he was older, yeah. Kukoc was very rarely hurt. Like I said, Jordan was never hurt. I mean, I don't know if it was luck or what, but you will see a lot with the great players. Like LeBron's never hurt. He got hurt last year, and it was like the first time in his career he'd been hurt. The great players never seem to get hurt that much. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you see this stuff in college. I honestly believe, and I don't know, somebody can. There was a guy when we were young on the trading floor. Dr. J and I would go hustle over. First, we went to the Europa Spa, which is the most disgusting workout facility. It was like the only one downtown, but it was awful. We went there every night. And then we started going to the River City because they had a big one down in the basement there. And there was a guy who put out a big fitness magazine every week. And he was an orthopedic surgeon. He was convinced. He said he used to treat more people that got hurt stretching before they did stuff than doing the stuff. He says the best way to warm up for any sport is do whatever it is you're going to do. It's slow speeds gradually working up to the speed you're going to play. Because you don't need, if anything, you stretch when you're done,
cool down.
He says you don't. But, I think some of it, Manny, might be these off-season conditioning programs. I think in college basketball, I think people are 10 to 15 pounds heavier than they used to be. Or something. We start having all these ACLs. Why would, and they're not from injury usually. They're just when people landing on their own.
They're almost always non-contact injuries where you just cut weird and your knee bends or you land weird and your knee twists. You see it in football all the time. You don't see it quite as often as basketball. My brother actually tore his ACL when he was in college. He played in college and it ended his career. He just didn't want to, he was done after that.
Did he get it fixed?
He did, yeah. But it was just,
For many years they didn't fix him. They didn't know how to fix him.
Yeah, but it was, for him, it was just a cut. Like he was kind of just doing like a curl cut, like at the elbow and, was getting ready to receive the pass and just planted weird and his knee gave out. And he'd never been hurt before. He's never been hurt since. We play basketball twice a week.
Well, I think sometimes in football, there was a lot of it had to do with, between the shoes and the artificial surface. I mean, the surface would grab. I mean, it's when I used to ski a real lot. Sayers
tore his ACL a couple times?
He tore everything. That was an unbelievable, where he was planted in somebody's submarine, the blocker, and just went under him and caught his knee full bore while it was planted.
So it just blew everything out.
Yeah, you don't see an injury like that. I mean, it's almost the timing of it has to be perfect, pretty much. It was awful to see. But he didn't run it. But I mean, Leslie Frazier ran out of his own. But in skiing, you used to see that whenever you change the height of the boot, you just change the part in your leg where it broke if you wrecked it, basically. I mean, well, it's the trip. There's a spot, and I think, there's a lot to that. But anyway, I think some of the stuff, and I don't think you run out of your own leg as much on grass as you do on the other stuff. And maybe there's something to do with the basketball. Maybe the shoes, there's not the slippage or something, but something's weird. Anyway, John, what do you make of, we were talking about, what got me on this thing about, the pot and the gambling. It's just a general, and this has nothing to do with, well, I guess it does. It has a tremendous amount to do with the current administration, but it's not just them. It's everybody who's, who's been a politician like for a long time. And what we sort of, in my opinion, what you need to do is, and we'll never do it, we need to elect somebody who's boring as sin in all these spots, and everybody should just leave them alone for a while, and they should like just fix crap instead of being out there tweeting every day and making your people that hate your people hate the other people. There's an article here that actually Pearl found for me. Pearl's a lady at the Nigerian Family Office. It's the Illinois Policy Institute. It says, making work pay in Illinois, how welfare cliffs can trap families in poverty. And this has to do with the same thing with the marijuana and, to a certain extent, alcohol and gambling. For me, I'm not a pot guy, but I like the tip of glass, and I don't mind making a bet once in a while. So it's not like it's a moral issue I have. I just don't like the idea that, oh, my God, Michigan's going to get this pot money. We got to get it.
Desperate times call for desperate measures, and as you make people more desperate, you know, their buying power is continually reduced, and the competition for jobs is stiffer, and there's all sorts of pressures on people, and you kind of encourage them to relieve their pressures by, you know, buying, you know, vices that the state is now taking a piece of through taxation, and it sort of becomes your civic duty to enjoy this stuff. And it's you know, the thinking is it's either Illinois is going to get the revenue or some other state that we're in desperate competition with for, you know, on a number of fronts. And it brings out the worst in people's behaviors. I'm like you. I don't see it always as a moral issue, but it does kind of go into, you know, a moral dimension when you prey so obviously on people who don't have any way of fighting back. You take advantage of their weaknesses rather than, you know, assist them in overcoming them. So there's a kind of abandonment of these people to a system that is really only interested in their money, not interested in their mental health or physical health.
I don't know where the line is, John, between a guy like Matty Weber or me once in a while throwing a bet down on not bothering a soul, putting a bet down on a football game, and governments gleefully seeing, you know, thousands of people walk into casinos and betting on football knowing it's all their dough.
Yes.
I mean, there's a middle, and I honestly, Manny, I don't know where that line is. It just bugs me the difference. Somehow you're and I a little, you know, obsession, shall we say, that should harm nobody into somebody else's gleeful grabbing dough. That's the problem, I guess. I don't know what it is, but why I have a problem with it, but I do. But here's one of the reasons. Go ahead, Manny. I asked you. I'll let you answer at least.
You asked me what?
I mean, I'm saying there's a line between they're gleefully counting up the cash, which I think is a problem, and you and me putting a bet down, which I don't think is a problem. I don't know how to define where my issue is there, but I guess, you know, just because the reason why I'm looking at this thing is the Illinois policy comes out. We need some people that actually put some thought into something. We don't have anybody. I mean, I don't think, you know, I listen to the people on the weekend, of the Trump's guys and all the other people on Face the Nation and so forth. And all they do is try their best to not tell you the truth on both sides. It really sucks. But anyway, this is a study by the Illinois Policy Institute, and they're talking about welfare along with, like, raising wages and actually raising of the minimum wage. And this is preposterous that this could ever happen. Studies findings for Cook County include a wide range of benefits provides a large magnitude of support. The potential sum, if anybody ever gets this, who knows, of welfare benefits can reach $47,000 annually for single-parent households and $41,000 for two-parent households. That's a lot. But it says welfare cliffs are significant and can trap families. A single mom has the most resources available to her family when she works full-time at a wage of $8.25 to $12 an hour. Disturbingly, taking a pay increase to $18 an hour can leave her with about one-third fewer total resources, net income, and government benefits. In order to make work pay again, she would need an hourly wage of $38 an hour to mitigate the impact of lost benefits and higher taxes. Is that spectacular or what? Or is it just me to think?
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. It says the system is inequitable. Duh. A minimum wage increase to $10 an hour would push a household where both parents work for minimum wage over the welfare cliff. They would suffer a net loss in household resources of about $9,000 as reduced government benefits more than to cancel out the higher wages. who designs this crap?
It just boggles my mind.
Yeah, it just. But how do you? But by the same token, God help us if we ever had a fair CPI index. But when you have people, the $10 an hour number has been the same. You know, be it $9 or $10, it doesn't make much difference. Well, I guess it does if you're making the 9 to 10. But if you look at that number, it really hasn't changed in what, Jen, 20 years?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Look at the, well, we've gone from, despite the, and I'll take a shot. Don't take this as a bad one, Jen. I'll take a shot at the old white guy Republicans in Washington. You know, their idea, the thought that people that are on welfare now and that are having problems are people that don't work. They really need to get out of the limousine because that ship has sailed, what, Maddie, 7 years ago? Most people that have problems by numbers, serious problems, they're all working. Some two jobs. The idea that everybody who's on welfare or on food stamps is sitting on their ass on the sofa is so 20 years ago or 30 years ago. I mean, am I right or wrong, John? I mean,
absolutely. People who are, they can't manage. I mean, they've got medical bills, they've got education bills, their job situation is tenuous. It isn't that they're, you know, living a life of Riley somewhere, and this is just pin money for them. This is just part of their struggle, and it doesn't answer all their needs, but it enables them to kind of keep going, albeit at a pretty desperate pace. So yeah, it's the profile. You know, I know people who, you know, on welfare technically, but it's not by choice, and it's not because they're proud of it, but they have no other options.
And they're all working.
Can't make it, they can't make it work any other way.
But they're all working.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the
and no growth jobs in many cases, but you know that isn't they take a better job if there were one around that, you know, that they could compete for. But a lot of people have been backed into a system now that it's just all rolled in together as the price of having a workforce that's not really very independent, and you know the state is carrying these people, the taxpayers carrying them. We've all got this, you know, out of date image of what welfare really is, and it's become a safety net that cuts across all sorts of socioeconomic backgrounds and education levels, and you name it. This is a situation that nobody really grasps. I don't think. It's
well, why do you think they don't?
Here or in Washington?
Why do you think they don't? They don't want to.
I don't think they have a solution for it. You know, they whatever the solution could be would be so unpopular or so transformative or so expensive in new ways, maybe, that they don't dare bring it up. But there's certainly no concerted effort to talk about it or, you know, give it any kind of airtime. And instead it's just, you know, it's always distractions. It's always, you know, all we have to do is do this to close some revenue gap or the cannabis thing or whatever else. And the problems are so much bigger than that. There is not enough of a revenue stream in any of that stuff to fix what's really broken, and nobody will even talk about what's really broken and how demoralized people have become by such a system.
Well, I mean, one of the listeners, Jan, sent, I still have it here somewhere. Matter of fact, I actually filed it, believe it or not. So it's not just laying on the ground. His hospitalization bill, when he was born in a little Company Mary hospital, his mother was in there for 6 days, it was like $250. Where like a, you know, regular person, but he was, who the hell was I talking to a couple weeks ago that, I don't know what happened, their kid was, I don't know, playing soccer or basketball or something or other, got whacked in the head and, like six stitches or something. It was like $5,000 or some crap in the emergency room. It was like $800 a stitch. Well, how the hell, if you're making $10 an hour, do you pay $800 a stitch? I mean, the stuff used to sort of match up where, you know, my dad, who was a policeman, I don't think he made squat for the city back in 1952 when I was hatched. But he paid the bill. And I don't think it was that big of a deal. I mean, you went to the hospital a few days, the bill's a couple $100. Well, yeah, you know, you knew you were going to have a kid. But it wasn't like it was $10,000 and he was making $2,000 as a policeman. It wasn't like five times his paycheck. I mean, for God's sake. I mean, things were at least, I think, even. We're way not even here.
And everything is so, you know, unsupervised, and it's you know, the drug industry, the opiate explosion is really just kind of a very obvious piece of this, that there is such profit to be made, and the morality of you know, prescribing things like this that are so destructive when they're abused, there's this carelessness about it. It's like we don't have to worry about the costs here. There's no incentive to bring costs down. Managed care, or, you know, that's just been a kind of, you know, rallying cry, but it hasn't meant anything. That hasn't resulted in any reduction in cost of services. It's just resulted in a reduction in care for many people because the care is still too expensive or prohibitive for them, and they go without it and, you know, suffer the consequences. But there's absolutely no outrage about this, and it should be plenty enough there to outrage everybody.
Well, I think, you know, remember the we used to, people in the OEX pit loved it. Remember Mr. What was the one who was the comic strip for, like, the people who were in cubicles? Wasn't Mr. Boffo. It was,
Dilbert? Or
Dilbert. It was Dilbert, I think. And they had the guys sitting there moving the VP's cubicle. She goes, "What are you doing?" And he goes, "I'm moving his cubicle a quarter inch or an eighth of an inch in every week." So you see the picture of this guy scrunching his way into the cubicle because he never noticed it. but every time you read this, even this Illinois policy, and I was reading Maddie this thing where this guy was totally outraged, trying to get him on as a guest. He's kind of like Carl. It doesn't sound like he's as bright as Carl, but he seems like he's written a couple books. And it virtually all the quote bad stuff, the inequities between college education, the types of things we talk about all the time, all of it seemed to start, I'm going to say, late 90s. Everybody says, you know, the hospitalization stuff wasn't like this 20 years ago. The college tuition really started to race up 20 years ago. And the question is, what in God's name happened 20 or 25 years ago to where we managed to be somewhat, I'll say, even along the way, where you had, you know, we used to be, you had people making $15 an hour and cars cost $5,000, and now you got people making, you know, a lot of people making $10 an hour and cars cost $31,000, where all of a sudden things, I'll say, became unmatched, for lack of a better term, economically. And I have a theory on this, and I'll talk about it after the break, but could be all wet, but you can imagine where it's coming from, the Montessori School of Chicago. So, hey, guess what, John? I got to the point where I was actually watching the Iowa game the other night instead of the Irish game. I can't watch a team with only 8 players. And I've got to get myself a new team to watch. Is it just me or what? I don't know. They seem like
strange times.
Strange. SP futures up 9.25. You guys have futures up 34. You're right. They are strange times. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including 4 past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering 3 research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top 3 tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than 3 decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice.
At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Something happening here.
Hello, everyone. Base Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howie. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. John Flanagan with us. We've been talking about some sports. We've been talking about my new team now, I think, is Iowa, Manny.
By the way, Kevin writes in and says, too bad you didn't watch the Irish on Saturday. It was a hell of a game versus Louisville. It went down to the final possession.
Yeah, they actually played pretty well. Louisville.
They were down big early, and then they stormed back. And, yeah, they actually, I think, took a lead late, and then Louisville came back and won. But that was I watched bits and pieces of that game. There was a lot of good games on Saturday before the football started.
Oh, the Irish are doing. I mean, for some reason, I don't know. Kevin, it's more of a Kevin question for Wednesday. I don't see them on TV as much. It seems like they're on less this year. I don't know. I haven't been able to catch them. Who was on Saturday? I'm driving out to Audrey's in horrendous weather. I could not find the NFL playoff game. You know what station it was at? It was on 1160.
The radio broadcast on Saturday, late game?
I kept checking the score. I kept checking
usually ESPN. The score carries them.
Yeah, they usually carry Westwood One. They did. They must have had somebody else's basketball or something.
Oh, I wonder if they were preempted by the Bulls game. They probably were.
Yeah,
because they carry the Bulls. Kevin wrote in regarding your guys' conversation before the break. He says, it's almost impossible for a state government to reorient itself to supporting the citizens' needs of current times when its budget is deeply impaired. It's all some states can do to get to next year. Can't invest in new initiatives without any cash.
Well, as Kevin teaches this kind of thing, that's an absolute recipe for disaster. That you can't concentrate on what you need to do.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Well, it shows how broken the decision-making process really is. You can't solve current problems, so you solve problems after they become institutionalized. Then, of course, nothing gets solved. So.
Right.
Well, and then your leadership, when I say your leadership, the voters are useless, pretty much. I mean, if you had a vote for an amendment to redo some of the pension funds in Illinois, the people who are getting the pension would outnumber the other people at the ballot box. Now, whose fault is that?
Right.
The people don't show up. I mean, you look at, you know, the mayor in Chicago, and I have no issue with the lady. I think she's pretty darn bright. To me, she's not a mayor. She got 90,000 votes in the.
Yeah, no, there's no mandate here at all.
There's no mandate at all.
Whose fault is that? It's not her fault.
I didn't say it was.
Well, she's. You just said she's no mayor. She's not the. She is the mayor. It's not her fault. We couldn't get off our asses and vote.
Well, my point is who. If she was a, if somebody was running like a, you know, in a pro-union thing, they would probably have gotten more. I mean, she got a lot of the, you know, the gay vote. But I don't have a problem with
right.
that, by the way. I don't know. I have no issue with that. I'm just saying, who gets to be in power? It's smaller and smaller groups of people.
My realization now is that, you know, once they instituted nonpartisan primaries in municipal elections, you get results like this all the time. And this is all we'll see probably from here out, because there is no way that this is, you know, cleared ahead of time by any kind of a party vetting process. You don't talk about parties. And this is why you get, you know, aldermen who right after they're elected, you know, declared themselves part of the socialist caucus, but they weren't running as socialists. If they
right.
had been, they probably would never have gotten as many votes as they did. But you disguise people's political allegiances, or you find ways of diminishing the importance of using those things when you decide who to vote for, and then you end up with, you know, five or six candidates in a row, and you take the top two, and they have a runoff, and you'll get wacky results. I think it's a bad precedent for getting really good leaders with lots of important people behind them and voters behind them too. So we're always going to have a string of marginal candidates who just happen to squeak out a few more percentage points than some other person who doesn't have anything more to recommend than the lead vote getter. It's a bad thing, and I'd like to see it revisited, but I don't see that, you know, happening. But I think it could start there. This is clearly an experiment that's not working. We're getting bad results in all these municipalities now.
Well, but look at who ended up as the two candidates for president last time with a huge vetting process there.
Well, and the same thing with the Democratic lineup too. They're
yeah.
kind of in the same boat because they're all practically singing the same tune. There's not much difference between any of them, and they're all sort of interchangeable in a way. But I think, you know, in municipal elections, there's a lot of difference between some of these candidates, and it's masked by the fact that it's nonpartisan. So I don't think that's helpful for voters to make an informed decision when it's designed to keep information.
Well, but I think it just takes on a different motivation, John. The other was, you know, how does Hillary or Trump's a little different. Because Trump, the Republican Party, had the nine candidates, and they put their show on the road, and the head insulter and the guy who was, you know, like a TV talk show host, you know, ended up being president because he insulted the other people and they didn't know how to deal with it, basically. Because he surely wasn't the smartest man on the stage. He was the best at that venue. But he picked up on what was happening a lot quicker, so he has a skill set. You'll never get me to admit that he doesn't. But it was a lot different than Nixon against Kennedy. You know, when all of a sudden there's nine other people and you tell another one guy he's sweating and everybody laughs, another guy, you know, how big his male appendage is and everybody else laughs. I mean, that it should be no part of a national debate of any kind.
I completely agree.
But anyway, there's some interesting numbers here from, and I don't know which came first, John, the chicken and the egg, but if you would lob these numbers at me as an economist or would-be economist, and just the way they are, I would say to you that I would expect major shall we say, economic changes, screw-ups, whatever you want to call them. If you take the numbers between 2000 and today, all right, the GDP has gone from $9.3 billion to 21. All right, so it's up basically 2.2 times. The money supply has gone from $5.7 trillion to, no, wait a minute. Yeah. Wait a minute, what am I doing here? I'm clueless. The GDP has gone from 9.3 trillion to 21. M2 has gone from 2.2 trillion to 3.2. National debt has gone from 25.7 to 23. So the money supply is up over three times. The GDP is only up a little over two times. The national debt is up four times. So I think what's happened is we've seen an awful lot of money pouring in the system to cover up the debt. And the money pouring in the system has caused a tremendous amount of inflation in 20 years that we're not told about. And the inflation is in areas, it's not even this time, and it does not help people with their salaries like it was last time. It's almost like a stealth inflation. And it's caused stuff like your money supply should not be growing really twice as fast as the GDP. Because if it does over a period of time, it's just going to go into higher prices, which it has, but not universally. It's going in the areas that are more monopoly-like, which are universities and healthcare.
And it makes the GDP numbers somewhat suspect,
right,
too.
Makes the GDP numbers suspect as well. Because the real GDP is not that much higher. It's not really 2.2 right. times. It's probably more like 1.5. Because, if the cost of a stitch in 2000 was $200 and now it's $800, you need to cut that back. Your deflator doesn't begin to recognize that. So by looking even at the gross numbers, you can look at them and say, there's a problem someplace. And in fact, there's a problem in a few places. Not everywhere. I mean, when I say a problem, you'll see, how did this get from here to there? And if you look at the gross numbers over a 20-year period, that shouldn't be like that. I mean, they should be somewhat, the growth should be somewhat steady on all counts. And it's not. So it doesn't surprise me that you have air pockets of massive inflation and we don't count. And that's where you have this tremendous distribution where it's essentially, well, $10 an hour, how many it's, what it's 900 hours, or no, what's 10 goes into 5 grand, which is this guy's bill. I mean, it's 50 hours work for four stitches or five stitches. How can that even be? Especially when the guy in the emergency room was probably making $30 an hour, right? I mean, he's not making, maybe, what does the emergency room doctor make it? $50 an hour, maybe? He's not making 500.
Maybe less in some places.
Yeah, he's not making 500.
Yeah.
So I mean, it is astounding when you see. That's why, when you look at your state budgets and you say, well, wait a minute, how are we paying the? If you look at the teacher's contract that they just signed, and I'm not saying good, bad, or in a barrel, people got a raise, deserved a raise, this other kind of stuff. All the money that you poured into the system to stop. To make up for the pension shortfall by raising the wages, even if it's 3%, and then all of a sudden 5% after several years, now all of a sudden when that person retires, they're going to get at least 5% more than you counted on last year. So the money you poured into the system to fix the problem, now you're right back where you started from, right? Because
right.
now the pensions
yep.
are going to be more. You haven't gained on it. Matter of fact, you're probably behind. I don't see where this all ends. Yeah, I mean, the article we were reading earlier, and I'm not trying to be doggy downer here, but I mean, if you don't fix something someplace, somewhere, I mean, and then the idea of if we just get everybody smoking dope all day, that this is going to solve the problem. I mean, do we actually believe that?
Well, it's the example recently of when John Marshall Law School was taken over by U of I, is to me it was a symptom of a bailout that now you've got all these people in the state university retirement system, so that increases the pension obligations. You know, you bring all these people in who formerly weren't in the system. Now they become members of that, and you've got one more law school that probably should not be around. We've got plenty of law schools. We've too many law schools at the moment, and it's an attempt, it seems, to kind of keep cash coming in to the system to help the pension systems, but it really doesn't help them. It just increases their obligations, and there's no way you can bail the system out by just bringing retirees into it. That's kind of what was behind the recent teacher strike. It was, you know, to fortify the union by making sure that they could add to the staff members and everybody else who'd be paying in their dues and getting on the pension rolls. But this is hardly the way to tighten your belt. This is just a way of enlarging the pit that's being dug here.
Well, do you think Illinois Chicago is a big enough place now where essentially they wanted their own law school and they bought one instead of started one? What do you think? They were better off buying one, or they should have started one?
They probably should have just closed it. I think that, you know, they U of I has a law school, and
yeah, but you got to go to there's none here. You got to go to Champaign, right?
Right, if you want to go to a state institution. But we have, you know, IIT Kent, we've got Loyola, DePaul, we've got, you know, there's plenty of law schools, and for some reason they've gone into expansion mode, and as part of the you know, burgeoning university bubble, there aren't jobs for lawyers like there used to be. The jobs don't pay as well, and it's fraught with all sorts of issues that should make people want to avoid going to law school and incurring the debt that you have to in order to get out of it now. So I thought that was a missed opportunity to just say, let's you know, cut off the spigot here, because this isn't helping our graduates, this isn't helping the legal community. It's just adding to an already glutted market of lawyers who are scratching around for ever decreasing business. But instead, you know, the state took it on, and so now they can brag that they've got a state law school here. But to me, that's just a symbol of defeat.
What do you think they're losing?
It's not a success story in my
book. They're losing money? Well, how can they lose money?
Well, it's putting it on the back of the taxpayers. But now these people are, you know, employed by a state institution, and they're in this pension mill. So they're high-end earners compared to a lot of university employees. And
but you would have hoped that you would have picked up you don't think they're 401k guys? At John Marshall.
Well, they were probably when Marshall was, you know, a private institution it was, but not now. It's part of CSRS, like the pension fund I was in.
So they get to keep their 401k.
So they're university employees, so they're now in this pension bucket with everybody else, which I think is just lose-lose. I mean, I don't see any help to the pension crisis by doing this, and I suspect there'll be other, you know, examples of this as a way of, you know, increasing the roles and the numbers of state employees. But, you know, we can't take care of the state employees we have now. There's just an ever-deepening hole, and this isn't the way to make solvency come any sooner. So I'm just very disappointed that it happened that way, and I think it could have been somebody could use some common sense and said, let's let this thing expire. John Marshall had a good run. We don't need to take it over. We don't need to keep it going. The need isn't there, for one thing. But now it's the state's problem, and therefore the taxpayer's problem. And, you know, that's a problem we didn't need.
Well, you would think that, let's put it this way, the Milton Friedmanites of the world weren't all perfect. They totally underestimated. They thought that economic freedom in some areas, or better economic freedom, would mean political freedom. Okay? And the same people would teach you, because I listened to this for however many years, same people would teach you that, for instance, like a state of Illinois and their pension plans, and I don't know everything about it, but I know something about it because we tried to get involved in it a bunch of years ago, and it was about as crooked as it all get out. And the amount of money that let's put it this way, we started business in 91, PTI, and we had, Audrey actually was here full-time at the time, and she tried to get us involved in the policeman's pension fund. And she went pretty far up the chain. And, they were pretty much in 1991, I want to say they were 90%, 95% funded, Jen, somewhere in there. They were not,
yeah, I agree.
They were, and the once the thing came down, it was, let's see, there was a board, all right, and then there was a consultant, and the consultant picked the money managers, and the money managers all got, you know, 1%, okay, which is way more than we would charge, way more. You know, if you're talking about that type of a thing, we would, well, first of all, you can index most of it. I mean, you're not, it's not like you have to be, they're not really, you know, asking, nor can you promise to grab the next, you know, Beyond Meat or something. But I, we would do that for way less than that. And then there, then of course, whenever you do an execution, you gotta have a whole bunch of minority people involved, which I don't mind, that part, except we would have done, even at that time, we would have done, you know, all the state business. And our normal charge was, you know, a penny a share then. I mean, when things were higher, and they were, some of the minorities were getting 3 cents a share. But I'm going to say their total cost between the consultants and all the other people, all the way down the chain, with the XX execution was probably 2% a year. And we would have done our, whatever piece they would have given us, I'd have been happy to do the whole mess for probably, you know, half a percent, maybe four tenths, six tenths, somewhere in there. And, I mean, if they wanted us to do options, we have to charge for options. You got to pay for options. But I mean, they probably didn't. So let's just say 1.5% over for how many years is that? 28 years is what? Duh. It's 50%, right?
Sure.
And now they're 40% funded. Well, do the math. 90% to 40%, percent and a half over, you're paying for the fees every year. You're down to 40. Why should anybody be shocked? I mean, the math doesn't lie a lot of times. It's like you end up your checkbook. Wait a minute, that's all I got. where did that go? Well, but guess what? Maybe you spent it, you dope. I mean, duh. I mean, it's not like you didn't spend this dough. And so near the end of the day, Audrey says, well, are we ever going to get any money from you guys? Oh, no, that's all locked up. You're never going to get a dime. What are you guys, idiots? An estate pension fund with the guy, who's the crook that Obama used the property of next door? What's his name? The guy who had the hot dog?
Oh, Resco. Tony Resco?
Yeah, he was the guy with the hot dog stands at the, in the parks?
Yeah.
Well, at one point, well, who was his schmuck that was actually on the board for the state? Not the police, but the state pension board for, like, the universities and stuff. Tell us his name. He was on there. I think at one point they wanted, we had to come up with $250,000 just to give a presentation. But of course, if you gave the presentation, they liked you, you probably got some stuff to manage. And, or if it was a 5-year deal, you had to cough up the first 2 years. Which, at 1% a throw, actually, from what I just said, I would have been willing to do that money-wise.
Of course, yeah.
Money-wise.
It was a good investment, yeah.
But I wouldn't have done it morally. I just said, I want no part of it. We're out of this. You know? Not, you know, who knows if we'd have corralled it anyway, but I'm sure if I could have written the $250,000 check to one of those guys, we'd have got a piece, and it probably would have been well worth our while. And today we would strut around like if we deserved it, right? Instead of paid off for it. I mean, there's reasons why they're not doing as well as other people, right?
Oh yeah, because they decided instead of saving costs on, you know, people managing their money, they'll pay more than top dollar just because it spreads whatever influence around that they want to spread around, and it's not their money. They don't look at it as something they really have to, you know, go out of pocket for. So it just enables, you know, an inefficient system to, you know, chew up money that could be put to better use in the economy. So.
Well, the interesting part would be, I think even the mob, you know, if everybody got laid off, everybody got laid off in the area, would probably go easy on people for like a little while,
right?
And you would expect that these numbers would come down. You know, if these people would be charging a little less here and a little less there. I don't think so, Jan. I think they're going to take it right to the, they're going to take the last dime from the state is going to go to somebody who's a hanger on.
Sure.
You know, one of the ticks that's hanging on to the dog. They have zero more. They deserve that dough, they think. I mean, it's really bizarre. I mean, the pensioners, I mean, we had one of the guys on the show, head of the Chicago Pension, Teachers Pension Fund, and he, you know, he was convinced that if there was one person left in the state, he owed all those people that money. I mean, there was no thought of wait a minute, the pensions are here, and the average person makes here where 25 years ago they have pensions. Where there's always enough money other people have to pay for you. And that's the mentality.
Sure.
And that's why, you know, if we can't get them through racetracks, if we can't get them through something, now we'll get them through. We'll find something.
Cannabis, yeah.
We'll find a weakness somewhere where they give me even more of my dough, of their dough. You know, it's like, okay. So, it's somewhere, someplace, the rack is no water left on it. You know, it just, I mean, I was out Saturday night, and it was horrible weather, with the football games on. We went to a nice little pizza place in Beverly, saw some of my old Southside gang. We were the only people in the place. I mean, they had some carry out and stuff, but I don't know that, I mean, if you walk into a neighborhood saloon during the week, there's nobody in there. A lot of times now, I mean, there's only so much you can grab out of somebody, you know. And what do you suppose the beer, Matty? Well, yes, you just questioned. What do you suppose the beer consumption at Wrigley Field is going to be this summer versus last summer per person? Now that there's a marijuana place 50 feet away, you think it's down? I do.
Down, yeah.
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Your theory could very well be right, though, but I don't know.
Well, I mean, I know that whatever it costs to go to a Cub game, be it $200, be it, you know, $300, $200, $100, whatever it is, if the hot dog goes from 5 to 10 and the guy's budget is $200, well, now there's $5 less to spend on something else. The peanut guy's going to get stuffed, or the beer guy's
sure.
Somebody's going to get stuffed for the extra $5. I mean, it's just math, right? I mean, there's a reason why. When you see Super Bowl weekend and everybody's doing shots at the bars, the next four nights you don't want to own a bar. The money for the week is gone.
Yep.
I mean, right, Jack?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, and this is, again, it's there's only so much appetite and there's only so much in resources to go around, and it isn't like this is going to be compounded. Well, you'll have beer revenue plus pot revenue. One is going to suffer. And distributors will have to readjust for the beer industry because they won't have as many takers as they used to. And same thing with gambling and you know, where you position casinos or casinos versus, you know, video poker. There's a certain amount of available revenue for those streams. And it isn't like you can increase it or compound it. You just reapportion it and distribute it to different taxing entities and different municipalities, but you don't really grow it, and I don't know if you want to grow it. So it's kind of a joke in a way that it's just people are going to stop spending money in one area and start spending it in another, and I think this has all been factored in how they decide what kind of, you know, how many beer vendors are going to have at Wrigley Field this year. I suspect they'll need fewer than they did.
I think what you guys are missing, though, is that there's already two huge, substantial black markets for marijuana, one, and for sports betting.
Well, that's
two.
Right, yeah, and that will continue. I think that probably may even grow.
Well, if the state does it right, which, you know, obviously we wouldn't expect them to do it right, but if they do it right, then they will price out the black markets and take that money, and then you're not affecting any other stream because there's people are already spending that money. If they do it incorrectly, where they charge way more and the black market people are still doing what they're doing, then you're actually going to pull money away from the other, from alcohol and from other things, like you're saying.
When's the last time right. You walked down a street in a crummy neighborhood and have a guy sell you a neatly put together bag of gummies that look just like a regular bag of gummies that you can walk right in the Wrigley with?
Well, gummies, I don't know. I've never bought gummies from a black market person, although they're very readily available now since they became legal in Colorado and California. Now you can get those.
Well, you can, okay.
Oh, absolutely. But the thing is if buying marijuana on the black market is a $1 billion industry in Chicago, which I might be underselling, it might be more than that. And has been. If the state does it right and they price it the same, I'd much rather just walk into a store and buy it legally than have to buy it, you know, looking over my shoulder from some strange guy.
Okay.
And it's not taking away from my alcohol budget or my food budget or anything else because I've already been spending that money for the last 20 years. That's how you do it right.
There's an incredible amount of people that have never gone to a back alley guy who are going to be walking right in these stores. I would never buy a flask of booze from some some back alley distiller. A lot easier to walk into Binion's or Binny's, or you know. Anyway, John, we will continue this next week, buddy. You have a nice week. We might need you later in a week. Who knows? SP Futures up 12. NASDAQ Futures up 44. Be right back, Mr. David Adelman.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right
now. Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. David Adelman with us. S&P Futures up 11.50 now. NASDAQ Futures up 42. We're kind of putting the whip to it. And the individual stocks in the Dow, pretty much all of them are up. We've got Boeing up 298. We got Apple up 140. We got Goldman Sachs up 179. Goldman Sachs has been pretty volatile lately. We have 3M up 103, trying to make somewhat of a comeback, but still down over the last couple of years. Like I said, down up 116. Europe, we've got DAX down 7, was down more earlier. Call that flat. FTSE up 24.3%. CAC around up 8.1%. It was 0.1%. It was up, was flat earlier. So they're moving up a little bit there as well. Asia was up earlier. Nikkei up 110.5%. Shanghai up 23.7%. Hang Seng up 316, 1.1%. So get some movement over there to the upside. Bonds, a 10-year back up to 1.85 here. The Bund minus 0.17, which is the highest we've seen it. I got the minus 0.18 a couple of weeks ago before going back the other way. Now it's coming back this way. Japan, I'm going to say this has got to be even, Maddie, but really it's minus 0.001. That's a number. Oil up 8 cents now, 59.12. Brent up 7. Not much going on there. Natural gas, 220. RBAB, 166. We got gold down $5, was down a little bit more than that earlier. Silver down 7 cents, still above $18, though at 18.03. Copper, 282. It's creeping just a little bit as people think China might be doing a little bit better. Well, you have to wonder if they really are when they had to drop the reserve requirements again a couple weeks ago. More money in the system, Manny. What do you have for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have some issues on the inbound Eisenhower at Sacramento. There's a crash blocking the two right lanes, causing significant congestion coming in on I-290 heading toward downtown. Again, that crash is at Sacramento on the inbound side, so the Eisenhower is pretty jammed up, as you can imagine. We also have a disabled vehicle on the inbound Kennedy, just before the Hubbard Street Tunnel. That's blocking the right lane, and that's causing a slowdown heading into the circle as folks navigate around that. Crews are on the scene getting that car out of the way. No issues on the Edens. Stevenson, there's a crash on I-55 northbound before Lockport Road in the southwestern suburbs. That's causing some congestion, but as you get closer into downtown, no major issues there. Southside expressways are looking good on the Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford. We have a crash on the Tri-State involving a semi that's been moved to the shoulder southbound just before Ogden Avenue on I-294. Expect delays on that. And then out in suburban Carroll Stream, Gary Avenue at Army Trail Road, there is a crash. So there's definitely some issues out there. So keep that in mind as you're heading out. Weather today, cloudy skies early, and then we should see some sunshine this afternoon. A fairly pleasant day for mid-January, high of 36. Right now it's overcast and 33 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 68 today. Right now it's clear and 41. In sports, the Chiefs fell behind 24-0 and then outscored the Texans 51-7 the rest of the way, blowing out Houston 51-31 to advance to their second straight AFC championship game. They'll take on the Tennessee Titans. Green Bay will take on San Francisco on the NFC side as they held on to beat Seattle 28-23. Packers had an 18-point lead on two different occasions, but had to hold off a furious Seattle rally to beat the Seahawks by 5. In NBA basketball, Bulls were off last night. Suns beat the Hornets 100-92. In hockey, Blackhawks were off. Coyotes lost to the Penguins 4-3. College hoops, none of our Illinois teams were in action, but Arizona lost big at Oregon State 82-65. And of course, the national championship game is tonight in college football. It'll be undefeated and number one ranked LSU versus undefeated and number three ranked Clemson. Tonight from New Orleans, that's a 7 p.m. Chicago time kickoff. Right now, it looks like LSU are 5-point favorites.
Are the Webby All-Stars playing tonight?
I think we are supposed to play tonight, although I haven't seen the schedule yet. So we were originally scheduled to play tonight, but sometimes the league will hold off another week to get another team or two to sign up if they need to. So we'll find out.
David, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
I have the burning question for the neighborhood. Maddie, is who wins in the Battle of the TVs tonight at the Tripoli?
Well, I think the college football game last year, I think it was on ABC, and so The Bachelor was rescheduled. They did it like on Tuesday or something. This year, I don't know if it's on ESPN or if it's on ABC.
Well, it's got to be on free TV.
Yeah, so I think that The Bachelor gets pushed like to a different day. I think. That's what they did last year, because I remember last year we came in wondering, and then The Bachelor wasn't even on.
That would be a tough fight. Just saying. Hey, but I would say...
You know, I laugh, but The Bachelor has been advertising on ABC for like months.
It gets huge ratings, I guess.
And I don't know, but I think the introductory one is like a huge, huge deal.
When you first get to meet all the girls.
Yeah, I guess it was like 3 hours long. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe The Bachelor is on tonight. I'll try to check here online. Because Jill mentioned something to me that she is going to a Bachelor party with one of her girlfriends.
If The Bachelor is not on and she's going to a Bachelor party, would that make you suspicious?
If I find out it's actually not on tonight? Yeah. Yeah, that would be interesting.
They'll be out carousing somewhere, she and all her pals. They'll be out watching an Iowa game somewhere.
Yes.
But the let me just say for this, I have some friends. I have a few people I talk to that are in the liquor business this year. Work for the bigger firms, which is Wirtz and Southern and those a few others. And from what I understand is making your, quote, numbers was very difficult this year. You know, if you're in charge of the Absolute line or in charge of the Jameson line or whatever, I think pounding out as many cases as people wanted you to, I don't know how many people, quote, made their, quote, numbers. But I'm going to say that next year, with the marijuana being legal for the whole year, if anybody thinks that they're going to make the numbers they made this year, I'm going to say I'll take the under on that, man. If the liquor sales will be down 5% or something, especially in the downtown area.
Jim Cramer had the chairman of Constellation Brands on and get a good view because they have, you know, big time beer distribution with Modelo and Corona and wine, and you know, they made a $4 billion investment in Canopy Growth, you know, for marijuana. And he said that Modelo and Corona, and I'm not a beer drinker so I wouldn't know, but he said Modelo, Corona, and some of the craft lines are very strong. He said everything else is weak. He said wine is down, and he said spirits, you know, vodka and tequila are holding up, but he said everything else is down.
Yeah. I know the one of the groups that I know of had, because this kind of goes in waves. I mean, for a long time, I'm going to say 20 years ago, 15 to 20 years ago, what do you suppose the number one selling spirit was, Maddie and David? By far. And you would never guess today.
Scotch.
No, it was Bacardi, because everybody, rum and cokes
oh,
were
really?
Huge.
Oh, really? Rum, huh.
Rum and Cokes were huge. Then for, I'm going to say, a decade, it had to be Absolute. And the other, but Absolute for sure, and the other assorted vodkas. And now they've gotten splintered up pretty good by Tito's, because people like that. Nice price point.
Tito was in here.
Yeah,
We had him in studio about 7 or 8 years ago, and we'd never heard of Tito's vodka at that point. And now it's the only vodka people drink.
Yeah, well, it's
he took over the world.
It's made in America. Had a nice price point, not real expensive.
And it's really good.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a couple others that have, it could have done the same thing. Those guys from, he was the one who came here. That's why we launched him.
I still have the Tito's Nike golf shirt that he gave.
Yeah, I do too. What about the one from Minnesota? Kept saying they were going to come here. Was it Prairie or somebody? They never showed up. And they're of course, the part that goes over the fence last. Nobody buys that stuff. Is it Prairie?
Isn't Tito's out of Texas?
Yeah.
Out of Austin, Texas, yeah.
Right.
He has an interesting story. He was a real estate guy that would make vodka for fun on the side, you know, sort of like a home brewer type thing, except he would make vodka. And he'd bring it to parties, and everyone was like, hey, you know, that's pretty good vodka. You should consider doing that. So he made a couple batches, and he would take them to, like, his local liquor store, and the guy at the liquor store was like, dude, I got dust on my other vodka bottles. Like,
yeah.
I can't carry your vodka. So he just kept, I guess he kept grinding it out, and he kept, what he would do is he would make his batch, and then he would buy, like, Smirnoff, Absolute, and Grey Goose, like all the competitors, and he would take them to parties and do blind taste tests. And until he consistently won over all of those, just among friends and family and different people like that, he would keep remaking it, you know, tweaking his recipe. And then finally, he was consistently beating all those other ones and entering contests and winning. And then that's when he just exploded. You know, his vodka, I think, actually tastes better than the other vodkas at that price point.
Well, for years, the one, whenever I read the taste test, the one that won consistently, you would never have guessed. Guess who it was? It was like the Smirnoff Red or something. It wasn't even a high end.
Really?
Yeah.
I would have guessed like Kettle or something. Kettle One's pretty good.
But the guys in the OEX pit always swore by Stoli because they used to put their vodka in the freezer because they didn't want to use any ice cubes.
Uh-huh.
And they said Stoli was the only one who didn't clout up. so they felt it was purer. Or whether it was or not, who the hell knows? But but I'm saying in the downtown areas, especially the tourist areas, a lot of them might be coming here to buy marijuana. I mean, I don't know. I'm going to guess that in those areas you have a fairly serious yearly downturn in your booze stuff. Now, will it affect the Triple A tap? I doubt it. But by the way, guess what number one is now? Or at least it was a year ago. I think it still is. By far and away.
Number one spirit?
Number one,
yeah, number one spirit. I'll give you a hint.
Ahead of Tito's?
It's in the Browns. The Browns is the whiskey and scotch stuff.
It's ahead of Tito's?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, not as a vodka.
Well, I know that, but you said number one spirit.
Jameson.
Well, yeah, Jameson's been the shot of choice for probably the last 10
years.
Well,
I'm saying, but it didn't used to be. It was, and for a long time, it was, well, I don't think Jägermeister ever made it to the top, but they were the shot of choice.
Jäger was a shot of choice for a while, sure.
Matter of fact, Danny Callahan told me in O'Callaghan's they put in the thing where they had it chilled. He said he put the thing, he said it cost him like a G or something. He said he paid for it the first 2 days or something. People love the frozen, we're not frozen, but really cold Jägermeister.
Yeah,
shots.
Now you never see anyone drinking that anymore.
We never see
anyone.
It
really is interesting when you talk about the trends of what people like.
Yeah. Well, rum and coke was obviously very sweet.
I never liked that.
I didn't either.
But, but yeah, you used to see a lot of people get Jack and Cokes. You don't see that very often either.
No. No.
I don't think people drink as much pop as they used to.
No, I don't think they do either. Well, you see a lot of people having soda, but I wouldn't exactly call that pop.
No, just the carbonated water.
Gin and tonics are coming back.
Are they?
Yeah, a little bit. Gin is making a big comeback, actually.
Interesting.
I used to like drink martinis. I never had a gin martini. I'm never big on gin. Anyway, so David, we're in this routine, market-wise, where we absolutely can't go down. We're down Friday. Now we're bouncing right back up today. We have, Apple going to go to 350 or someplace before anybody stops it, if anybody ever stops it. And yet it's unusual, even in our extended lifetime in the business, to see stocks double in a year where they earn the same much as they did the year before. It's pretty unusual. This is the biggest year I've ever seen market average-wise. Now, again, we talked last week about how narrow the market averages are. But market-wide, the earnings were pretty much, what, unchanged? And yet the market's up 20-some%. So that's a lot.
Well, and there's been huge analysis. I mean, five stocks, the big five out of the S&P 500, have accounted for, 35% of the gains. And if you take the Dow, seven stocks for the last 1,000 points from 28,000 to 29,000 account for all of the gains.
Yeah.
The other 23 in the Dow are flat to down. So, I mean, it is very, very narrow, and it's hard for folks to understand because they just look at the headlines and the averages and, if something's up 20%, mine should be up 20%. And, if you have the five, then you're going to be up more than 20%. Or the seven in the Dow, but otherwise you're not.
In 2000, not that there's any kind of prediction, because history is never, that's why it's history, it's never the same again. Five stocks got to be close to 50% in the QQQ, which we now are back to that same spot. I'm going to say only one of those stocks was in both lists. Can you name it? And what were the other four in 2000? And I'm going to say...
Oh, both lists. What, the QQQ and what else?
The QQQ today. 2000 and today. They were the top five. It made up 50% of the QQQ in 2000.
Saying only one is now?
Only one of the five is in both lists.
I would guess it'd be Microsoft.
Ding, 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 ding. Very good. What were the other four in 2000? Few of them aren't even up since 2000.
Well, I'm sure Cisco is one.
Yes.
Maybe Qualcomm?
Nope.
Okay, I don't know.
Oracle,
right.
Intel?
Yeah.
And I'm not 100% positive on the other one. I think it was Dell. Not 100% on that, but I think it was Dell.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I know Cisco's down from there, and I mean, it's hard to say with Dell because, it went up, it went down, it got taken private, came back, was part of the, acquired EMC, partners to a huge extent with VMware. So, I mean, it's hard to really value what part of the company you're looking at. I would guess that the overall capitalization is down from there, but I don't know for sure.
Well, Oracle's back up to like 54. I think it was like 65, wasn't it? So it's not bad.
Yeah.
And I don't. Well, Intel was in the
60s. Cisco's definitely down.
No, and I think Intel was in the 60s, wasn't it?
Yes.
So they're not there now, I don't believe.
No.
Well, it's close, 59, but it's a long time.
Yeah.
But, boy, some of those stocks, Cisco went from what, 60-something to 9 or 8, 5?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the QQQ, the index, went from 120 to 20, right, or 22?
Right.
But that's...
The bottom was March of 2009 or something?
Well, imagine now the QQQs if... No. It'd come back. It didn't reach down to 20 again in 2009, I don't think. I could be wrong there, Dave.
No, but off the peak.
Yeah, but I'm saying the 2000 to like 2001, where it went from 120 to like 20-something. I mean, imagine
right.
The QQQ, which is now 219. Imagine if like a year from now it was 40. Can you imagine the whale of tears? I mean, we'd fill
never
up...
Never know.
Yeah, we'd fill up know. Lake Michigan more. Which we don't leave Lake Michigan anymore. Fill up. It's full up already. But I mean, it's, you know, these, you look at these numbers, and when you look at companies that I'm going to say don't make any money. I mean, if people say, Amazon, which makes a little bit, has to be $1,900. No, it doesn't. It could be $300. They don't make any dough. There's nothing to fall back on. I mean, when I say nothing to fall back on, I'm absolutely not telling anybody to dump their Amazon, because I actually think out of that group, it might be the cheapest one here. You know, just saying, I mean, relatively, but that the concept of relative value is enough to get you really in trouble, right, David?
Well, it's off the highs, and, you know, it hasn't gone anywhere for, you know, the last year and a half, basically, maybe a touch. But in relationship to the basket and the baskets of the, you know, FANG stocks, you know, plus Apple and the ETFs, which, you know, they buy the ETFs, they buy the XLK or whatever,
right.
IGV, you're going to, you know, boost Amazon. It is by far the cheapest. If you look at versus growth and earnings and whatever, I would say Facebook is probably the cheapest.
Well, and they've got, you know, they're like the tobacco companies, though they're constantly in the crosshairs of being put out of business. Although I don't think any of our politicians have the stones to do that, so
yeah.
I don't really. But still, it would be hard for me. I went all those years, David, and I never put anybody in a tobacco stock. You know, because I mean, what were you going to say to people? Let's see, out of all the stocks in the world, you had to put my money into a stock that had, you know, 48, 50, 200 legal cases against them on any given day. You know,
I had one of my first clients, whatever, 28 years ago, was a relative, an older lady, and she directed her own account, so I will take no, you know, responsibility. And one of her first trades was to buy Philip Morris, and the next day, the first big time class action suit from Florida came about. That was a quick $4,000.
Yeah, I mean, then they probably made it back.
The next day.
Yeah, they probably made it back at some point.
No, she panicked and quit.
Oh, all right. Well, that could happen, too. I mean, I get it. But I'm saying it's just hard to put. I mean, clearly, if you're going to be an index trader, I mean, if somebody, you know, gave me, whatever, here, Chiefs, $2 billion, solve the Canadian Teachers Fund or something. I would probably, you know, if I was putting myself into an S&P 100 fund, I would probably underweight that just a little, David, because of that. But I wouldn't
sure.
I don't see how I could have no Facebook if I was in an index. If they wanted me to do an index fund, I mean, I might have a little less of the FANGs just because they're so high. But you're not going to, if it should be 2.5% of your fund, you might make it 2, but you're not going to make it 0.
Right.
I mean, even though you might like to. I don't know.
No, I agree.
I mean, is this the year that we revert back to the mean? And all the people on CNBC, all they're talking about is you got to get involved in these oils because they're going to be the standards of this year. And everybody likes this Marathon oil. And you know what, David? I still got a lot of people in the XLE. If you gave me, you know, $20 million today, I'm not sure I overweight the oils anymore. I mean, to me, it looks...
Well, and you know, it's so between the refiners and the drillers and the pipeline folks and the vertically integrated, the Chevrons and the Exxons and their participation in the ETFs. It's so fragmented, and some have terrible balance sheets with crushing debt, and others are, you know, have trimmed back and diversified into shale and natural gas and the like, and I'm certainly the... far from an expert in that. I have just a dribblings of stock in my customer accounts, but you know, it's if you look at, you know, a diversified one versus a refiner or driller or pipeline, you know, it's different. I mean, you're not looking at the same game.
The only thing I would I think would really be a kick in the ass to that industry, and something I'd really love to see, because it would piss off the Russians. If somebody could get together a fleet, I don't know who that somebody would be. It has to be somebody from another world, maybe. If somebody could get together a very serious 200 tanker big ship fleet to both convert back and forth from liquid to gas, natural gas for export, then I would be all over that industry to buy it, because I think that is an amazing crown jewel that we have in this country that we are barely scratching the surface on. Because I think every country in Europe would love it. I think we would get them off the oil from Russia a little bit. I mean, there isn't anybody that wouldn't want natural gas. Why wouldn't you? It's cleaner, it's cheaper. And we're flaring the stuff off, for God's sake.
Right.
And if we could find a way to hook the, you know, Prudhoe Bay, which is nothing but gas we've been burning, the Permian Basin, if we could load that stuff up and sell it to people, all of a sudden I'd be all over these oil companies. But we've been at this a decade. We're a decade away still. I don't think we're gaining on it at all, do you? Maybe a little bit.
A little bit, but not what the promise seemed to have been, like you said, a decade ago.
And LNG used to, you and I were invested in that 10 years ago. Does it go anywhere? I don't even haven't looked at it in 5 years.
Me neither. Haven't had a share in at least 5 or 6 years.
I mean, I don't even check it out anymore. I don't know.
No.
I did hear somewhere that we were very close, or we had our first one. Where the deal with this is, I think, and I'm no engineer on this, is you have a natural gas pipeline essentially to a conversion center, for lack of a better term, and a ship would pull up to that, and you would have something at the port, the dock, whatever you want to call it, would compress the gas into liquid natural gas and put it in the tanks on these kind of weird looking ships, right? They look like they're atomic bomb holders or something. And then I heard, David, that somebody had put a ship together or two, that all you had to do was hook the gas pipeline into the ship, and it was able to do the compression itself. And on the other end, the decompression. Now, other than seeing that ship, and I can't recall if it was already made, it was a concept, it was half made. That had to be 3 years ago, and I haven't heard boo about it. Are there 10 of these, 2 of these, none of these, that it didn't work?
I have no idea.
Well, maybe we'll dig into that. Maybe I'll dig into that a little bit this week. But so what do you make of, even though the Iran stuff seems to be percolating down a hair, gold's still up here, silver's still up here. The danger area is that, I don't know if you were listening earlier when I was talking about the, in the West, you know, 20 years when people are saying how weird some of the stuff has come, people's wages versus medical care versus other stuff. You look at how much more the money supply has gone up than GDP, it's not surprising that there's going to be some pockets, at least, of very serious inflation that people are denying. I mean, if you look at a 20-year span, it's right there.
I agree. And the employment figures, you know, showed somewhat slowing growth in wages and the like, and gold is holding up. So I you know, and the dollar's where it was, what, 4 years ago? So I think there, again, until the last 8-10 months, I've never been a gold bull, never. And I think there's a reason to own it. You have to be patient.
Yep.
Don't buy any highs. You know, you get these $30 to $50 breaks, but those are buying opportunities.
Well, when you say that's the one, there's two issues with the dollar. I get nowhere when I say this. We have a minute. Is when I say the dollar, it could be the fact that the dollar value is going down. People immediately say, "Oh no, it's doing fine against the other currencies. There's two measures. There's a measure of the dollar relative value to other currencies. Then there's a measure of all the currencies together versus what you're buying. Right?
Right.
And if you've got, you know, five gold mines and all of a sudden you double the amount of dollars, guess what? You just double the price of the gold mine, right?
Right.
It's not, I mean, it has nothing to do whether the pound versus the dollar is the same number. It could easily be.
Right.
Do you think, last question, 30 seconds, is the Iran stuff the quickest crisis off the page ever or what?
Just about. I don't think it's over, though. You know, they'll launch something against Saudi or, God forbid, against Israel or whatever, and it'll perk up again. They lied about the missile on the, you know, shooting down the plane. They, you know, I hate to say it, they're not to be trusted.
I think you're probably right about that. SP Futures up 9.25. NASDAQ Futures up 36. David, thank you. David, thank you. Maddie, good job. We'll be back tomorrow on Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.